The 100 Years' War, to the Gascon period. The end of the French offensive in 1377. The French army swept effortlessly down the Dordogne. St. Foix surrendered the morning after the French arrived. Castillon, although virtually abandoned by Ellum, was defended by its inhabitants for 12 days. It surrendered only after the lower town had been lost and the great double keep had been severely battered by the French trebuchets. Anjou sent raiding parties downstream to try out the defenses of Lilburn and Saint-Emilion, but instead of trying to force his way past Ellum's companies, he unexpectedly turned south and marched cross-country towards Garonne. This move wrong-footed Ellum, whose forces were distributed along the north shore of the Dordogne and the Gironde River, well away from the Duke's new line of attack. The Garonne was hardly defended at all. The last notable fortifications on the Garonne east of Bordeaux were the twin towns of Saint-Macaire and Langon, with their great 13th-century keeps standing on either side of the river some 30 miles away from the capital. The council in the Château d'Ambray hurriedly recalled Cresswell and Chandler from Bourg and commandeered ships to carry their men upriver to Saint-Macaire. Ellum marched after the Duke and shut himself in the Bastide of Cadillac, a short distance downstream. The south bank of the river was abandoned. Langon remained entirely undefended except by its inhabitants. In the third week of September, the French army appeared before Saint-Macaire for the second time in 2 years. This time, the inhabitants of the lower town entered into negotiations as soon as the Duke of Anjou arrived. The town surrendered after 4 days. The garrison plundered the town and retreated with their spoils into the citadel, an enormous square keep with walls 10 feet thick built in a projecting rock at the western extremity of the town. Anjou erected 8 large trebuchets around the keep, and which battered the walls day after day. The garrison finally surrendered on about the 7th or 8th of October, after 2 weeks of this bombardment. Langon, on the opposite bank, opened its gates without waiting to be attacked. The French army was now reaching the limits of its endurance. Winter was closing in. Supply problems intensified. At the siege of Castillon, forage parties had to range more than 30 miles from the army to find food. By October, horses were dying for want of fodder. The Duke of Anjou decided to call an end to the campaign. The last episode was an act of personal revenge. On October the 9th, 1377, he appeared before Duras, the castle of Lord of Durfort. The great castle keep of the Durforts, with its four corner towers, was impressively strong, but of little strategic value. Yet Anjou spent 3 weeks battering it into submission with his artillery and launching bloody assaults against the walls. The survivors of the garrison retreated to a tower after the rest of the castle had been overrun and finally surrendered at the end of October 1377. Louis of Anjou then turned for home. In the midst of his Italian preoccupations, Pope Gregory XI found time to write to the Duke of Anjou from his summer palace in Agagni, south of Rome. He was fulsome in his congratulations. The capture of so many places in so short a time, and of almost all the leaders of the enemy army, had caused him inexpressible joy and satisfaction, for which we give thanks to the Lord, hoping that He has destined you for some yet greater triumph. It had been an exceptionally well-managed campaign, which had skillfully exploited the weaknesses of the admittedly outnumbered enemy. The whole of the valley of the Garonne was open up to future French armies. Bordeaux, the main political pillar of the English duchy, had become a frontier town. Detachments of Anjou's army raided across the Entre-deux-Mers and the western Bazadais into the Médoc, forcing the surrender of many smaller places. According to the official count, no fewer than 134 castles and walled towns were taken. The result was to consolidate the Duke's grip on a great swath of the territory all around the city. He returned for home in mid-October. Instead of paying off the whole of his army as he did in 1374, he put part of it into winter quarters, distributing men amongst garrisons close to Bordeaux. The Bastille of Cadillac, abandoned by Sir William Ellum, was turned into a depot for stores and equipment waiting for the great siege which Anjou intended to undertake the following year. In due course, Anjou's garrison was succeeded by the lords of the countless small towns and castles who received them as confiscated lands, They carried on the unending war of raid and reprisal, which had been an ordinary feature of the life of Perigord, Quercy, and Nerugaud, and Auvergne for two decades. The estate accounts of the archbishops of Bordeaux were among those of the largest landowners in the region. They tell the story in the laconic marginal notes, which their clerks address to the auditors. This tenant has not paid his dues because everything has been destroyed by the French. That estate produces no revenue on account of war. Another has been wasted by the French, and lies empty and uncultivated, the grapes rotting on the stalks. Many are marked with the increasingly familiar refrain, deserta est, abandoned. The accounts of the papal collectors in the region tell the same tale, a wasteland, utterly abandoned, devastated by war. A large part of the diocese of Béziers, lying southeast of Bordeaux, was described in 1379 as charred and ruined. Some of these places did not recover for more than a generation. In 1384, the Sudan de Troyes, one of the biggest lay landowners in the Bordelais, explained to Richard II's official why he could not repopulate the deserted parishes of his demesne. This man looked back to the fall of Saint-Macaire and the defection of Berard d'Albert as the turning points in the fortune of the district. The inhabitants had fled. Raiders on both sides were apt to appear without warning. Soldiers of the duchy had demolished the only castle in which the peasants could take refuge. So land, once yielding 300 marks a year, became worthless. There were many other tales like this. Surveys carried out at the end of the 14th century were still reporting farms invaded by brambles which had gone uncultivated 20 years before. It's true that the picture was not uniform, and Médoc, north of Bordeaux, largely escaped the problems elsewhere. And between the wrecked farms, there were islands of prosperity where men still made a living from the land. But part of the problem was the very caprice of the war, which left buildings intact in sight of burned-out shells and neatly tended rows of vines next to hillsides from which everything had been grubbed up by the soldiers. So that completes the French offensive of 1377. Very, very effective. Now the sources for this, The Hundred Years' War, The Chronicles by Froissart, The Hundred Years' War by Perrois, The Hundred Years' War by Nylans, and The Hundred Years' War, The House Divided, Volume 3 by Sumption. So I hope you enjoyed that, and as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out our merchandise, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.